recognizing the unsung heroes of sports media.
I'm stuck in this pit, working for less than slave wages, working on my day off.
This is the Producers Podcast.
I'm a producer.
Oh, you're the executive producer.
With your host, Dimitri Ravenos. And it starts now.
So this is a cool week and a busy week for podcasting here at Barrett Sports Media because over the summer, the podcast network started to grow with the Under the Radar podcast and then, of course, this podcast as well. And now the OG of Barrett Sports Media podcast, the appropriately titled Barrett Sports Media podcast, is back for a new season this week. JB has some great conversations with Nick Cattles, Michelle Smallman, Nick Wilson, Dave Tepper, and Matthew Collar. They are going up once. One is going up every day this week. So if you have not checked out the original Barrett Sports Media podcast, the original podcast on this website, now's a great time to jump in, go start with the new ones, go through the back catalog. Hell, do the same thing with this show. Listen all over again. All the listens any of us can get all benefit the whole network. So thanks for supporting us. We really appreciate you listening to everything that we do here at the Barrett Sports Media Network podcast network. Barrett Sports Media podcast network. This is not a great reflection of my on-air abilities, so we'll soldier ahead. Danny Zetterman is my guest this week from ESPN 1000 in Chicago. We recorded back in September, and we had this great conversation that included a lot of talk about what it is like to work directly for Disney. And then wouldn't you know it, Disney went and sold the operating rights to ESPN 1000 to Good Karma, who now operates that station in Chicago. So we threw everything out, re-recorded in October, and that is the conversation you are going to hear right now. So tell me a little bit about how the changeover from Disney to Good Karma has gone so far. Has it manifested itself in a super noticeable way from day to day, or is it business as usual for folks in the programming side?
It's been pretty much business as usual. The guys at Good Karma and Gals made it seamless for us. So when the changeover took place, it's not like the lights went off and went back on. It was as seamless as possible. We came in, did our jobs as we always did. There's getting to know new faces, new people, but that's to be expected. But everybody's been great, and it's really been a good experience. You know, when you've never gone through something like that, you kind of go in blindfolded and not sure how things are going to go, and it couldn't have been better for us.
So you've got Mike Thomas, who is going to be coming in as your new market manager, and I don't know if you've had the opportunity to meet or speak with Mike yet, but that guy is, that's a guy with a huge reputation, not just in the format, in the industry. I mean, he is coming off of his station winning Sports Station of the Year at the Marconis. I would imagine there is a real feeling of excitement in the business of what can be accomplished with him at the helm.
We are incredibly excited. You know, when the announcement was made, some people in the building knew of him, but None of us really know him. I mean, I had the privilege of, exchanging emails with him, and I'm extremely excited to meet him and learn from him. But just looking at his resume, I mean, it's like you're bringing in a Joe Maddon, right? You're bringing in the Pat Riley, the Phil Jackson, the guy that's been to the top of the mountain, that has an idea of what it takes to be the big dog in the market. And we couldn't be more excited to have him here and learn from him and hopefully go to number one and hold that flag for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm excited for you guys. I like Mike both professionally and personally. And thinking about when that deal got announced that he was going out to Chicago, I just started thinking about like how many people in production and programming come out of that area of the country. Like what is going on in Chicago that producers and PDs of sports stations get churned out like crazy?
I think this is just one of those towns where sports talk radio in general means something to us.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to other markets and I've lived in Kansas City. Sports talk radio is great there, but people don't live and die by their sports teams like they do in Chicago, in Philadelphia, in Boston. And these are places that when you say to yourself, all right, listen, I'm going to go into sports talk radio, that's the career I'm going to choose. It's something where you actually got to put your head down and grind and work because it's such a competitive market. I mean, like for me, being a producer here in Chicago, there's only so many jobs in sports talk radio to be a producer. So you have to be on top of your game, and your shorts got to constantly be sharp because of the competition. And I think that's why when you get the opportunity to go to the next level and be a market manager or be a program director, you're really, really sharp because, you know, the old saying, I don't want to sound cliche, but iron sharpens iron.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, so as you think about that and you think about you having to be on top of your game every day to justify the position you're in, what does that look like to you? What does you on the other side of the glass at the top of your game, what is Kaplan see when he looks at that?
There's an intensity. It's every time we do a show. So, you know, the show isn't just the 3 hours we're on the air. We're on 9 to noon Central. It's not just that 3 hours. It starts with the pre-show, with the show prep. And there's an intensity that we all have preparing for a show where we know, okay, this isn't just us filling time. I, as the executive producer of the show, never want us to feel like we're just getting to the finish line. Every segment has to mean something because if you're not putting out your best work with all the options out there between Sirius and podcasts and other radio stations, someone's going to hit the button. So you've got to constantly be doing your best work. So I'll, you know, if I feel like a segment didn't hit the mark or I feel like we missed the mark at a certain segment, I have no problem going into Dave Kaplan, the host of the show, and telling him, hey, Cap, I think we missed the mark there. When we talk about this topic, we should do this, this, and this. And he and I have been working together so long that we understand each other. And there's a familiarity factor where he knows, hey, listen, he's not saying this to be an ass. He's saying this because he wants the best out of me and he wants the best for the show. And I think that, you know, that's the goal every day to go in with, how can I make this show the best show we did?
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people about something you hit on there, which is the element of, I guess, staff psychologist that that comes along with being the producer. Now, at this point, you and Dave have been working together for a while. And like you mentioned, he knows that you always have the best intentions for the show overall when you point something out. How long did that take to develop? Did you come in to the position with a guy that sort of recognized you're coming from a place of some authority, or did that relationship take a while to build up?
It didn't really take a while. It obviously takes a while to build up because there's a getting to know you period.
Like, sure.
You know, I think most people in my position, most executive producers in sports talk radio, have a type A personality. And I think a lot of the hosts obviously have a type A personality. So when you put a bunch of us together, you kind of know what to expect. But I like to say that I'm like vinegar. When I'm in a room, you know I'm there.
Yeah.
And it takes a while for you to understand that I'm going to be blunt with you. I'm going to be honest with you. And for the show to be good, I'm going to say exactly what I think. I understand that a lot of times talent have egos and a lot of times they don't want to hear it. But as soon as the talent realizes that everything you're saying and doing is for their benefit and the benefit of the show, you can see eye to eye. And luckily for me, Cap is the kind of guy that his ego isn't so big that he gets offended easily. Like, mm-hmm. He can take criticism. He can, you know, I can say to him, hey, I think we missed the mark, or nobody cares to hear about that topic, or that sounds boring to me. And he doesn't get offended, or he doesn't, you know, get his chest all up in arms. Like, what are you talking about? I think it's interesting. He'll go along and we'll discuss it and we'll move forward as a team. And, you know, becoming a team takes some time. It's just like any sports team. There's got to be that gel factor where you guys work together. But once you get to that point, it becomes like a fine-tuned machine. And that took a couple months. I think maybe by 4 or 5 months into our relationship on the show, we were kind of smooth sailing.
You mentioned that most sports talk radio personalities have a type A, or I'm sorry, most sports talk radio producers have a type A personality. I wonder if that is viewing it through the lens of major markets. Because one of the things that I notice, whether it's talking to clients, just personal experience doing fill-in stuff, it seems like in mid-size and even, like, I'll say large markets, like those ones sort of between like 20 and 50, I feel like the number one problem that I see across the board with producers is this feeling that the host is my boss and there's no sort of feeling of ownership of the show for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a problem, and I think that's the wrong way to view it, but I also think that has to do with experience a lot of times.
Sure.
You know, when I first started in this business, I was producing a guy by the name of Dave Baum, who is a Chicago radio legend, and I was producing him on Saturday mornings, and I had that timid attitude. Like, I would call him on a Tuesday and be like, hey, Dave, what are you thinking? Are there any guests you want? Or, Dave, what do you think about this? And I was very passive and timid, and one day he pulled me aside, and he said, he's like, listen, you've got a lot of potential in this building. in this business, but you've got to take ownership of the show. It's mm-hmm. not my show, it's our show. He's like, you're not going to offend me if you tell me you think I should talk about this or I should talk to this guest. You're not going to offend me. You're going to let me know that you care. And as soon as he said that, something clicked. A lot of times, you know, when you're producing these huge personalities and you're producing these guys that you grew up listening to, you know, there is a level of intimidation and you've got to prove yourself. But that's the fun of it. That's the game, right? Like, all right, now I'm in this room with this guy that I've listened to or this gal that I've listened to on the radio for the last 5, 10 years. And now I want to prove my worth and let them know I can play with them. And you've got to step up your game. And I mean, it feels uncomfortable at first, but it's part of the growing process. And once mm-hmm. you get past that and you look them in the eye and they look you in the eye and you know, hey, we're on the same page. We want to make good radio. That's why we're all here. You get this comfortable feeling with each other.
You mentioned that there are times or you never really feel shy about telling Cap this topic bores me, or I don't think people care about that. What about his pushback to you? Are there times he tells you, I've got something in mind, let me work with this? Or is there, does he trust in you enough to say, if you feel like that's boring or there's not enough buzz around it, that's it, we're moving on to something else?
Sure, it goes both ways. There'll be something where he'll like come in and say, what do you think about this topic? And I'll say, it bores me. And if he's not in love with it, or he's just kind of feeling out how I feel about it, he'll go along with it. He'll be like, yeah, I see where you're coming from. But if he comes in the morning and, you know, it's 7:15 in the morning and he feels strongly about a topic that I'm just not that interested in, but I can look in his face and see that he's got a passion for it, I'm all for it. Let's do it. Because let's not forget, he's the guy talking on the radio. He's the guy that his voice is coming across. And if he's buying into the topic and he feels passionate, there's a good chance that the listeners that are tuning in to hear him will be interested in it as well. He's going to sell the topic in a way that's going to interest the listeners. And most times, he'll sell me on it in a way where I'll get interested also. Even if it's not something I necessarily woke up and I was like, boy, I hope we talk about that today. If I can sense that he's eager and ready to go and feels passionate about it, I'll be all for it.
You talked about guest booking a little bit earlier. You alluded to it when you first started out as a producer. How did you go about from then to now building your Rolodex?
Back when I started in this business, it was all about trading numbers. It was like trading baseball cards. So I would get enough. I'll never forget. I got Steve Lyon's phone number, and it was like the greatest thing in the world. And then I traded that with somebody for Jim McMahon's phone number. So now you've got two phone numbers, and now there's another producer you meet, and he's got Richard Dent's phone number. So, hey, I'll give you Jimmy Mack and Steve Lyon's for Richard Dent. And it became a trading thing. Now it's to the point where I've got a big enough Rolodex and I've got good enough relationships with either agents or teams where they'll throw me numbers if I need them, and then I'll throw numbers to friends if they need them also. Now it's kind of like we don't have to trade on the spot. Just, hey, if you need Akeem Hicks' phone number, I'm going to give it to you. Just remember that, because in a couple weeks, I'm going to ask you for David Ross's phone number. I know you have it. You're going to have to give it back to me.
Right. That's a very smart way to go about building Rolodexes. You know, I talk to PDs and hosts all the time about looking for, you know, what they're looking for in a producer, and the number of people that talk about the contacts being their top priority. I always feel like that's a little bit misguided, because you can always build that up, right? It's the personality that takes that may not develop, that I always feel like people should be a little bit more concerned about, because you're right. Like, in a building with multiple producers and a PD and host, it feels like there's a lot of resources to build out contact lists.
Yeah. And here at like ESPN Chicago, for example, all the producers get along really well. We're all on the same team and we all are willing to share numbers. So for instance, if the afternoon guys are trying to book, like just the other day, the afternoon host, afternoon producer Adam Abdallah said, hey, we want to put on Jack Del Rio to talk about Khalil Mack. I just gave him the number, didn't even think twice, because if their show succeeds, it in turn helps our show, because we're all one team. Like, you know, I've worked at stations where it's like every show is on an island, and the producers are competing with each other for guests, and the hosts are competing with each other to, you know, to have the big guests. That's not the best way to go about it, because I know if Cap's show does well and Waddle and Sylvie show does well and Carmen and Yurko show does well, the station does well. And at the end of the day, the goal is for the station to succeed. The more listeners we have, the better off the shows do, And at the end of the day, that's when the ratings are going to reflect that. So, you know, we work as a team here, but I also think booking guests, like the whole thing about booking guests has changed incredibly from when I got into this business. I started booking guests in 2001. That was a time when you would call somebody on their phone, cold call them, and they'd answer because it was pre-caller ID. Or you'd call somebody at a hotel. You'd call a hotel and you'd ask, you know, for a player's room, and they'd put you through. The player would answer and you'd get them on the line. Nowadays, with cell phones and caller ID, nobody's answering phones of numbers they don't know, right?
Right.
So the whole thing about booking guests is a text game. And you hope they recognize your number, they know you, and you send out some texts and hope they get back to you. And sometimes you'll cold call those numbers and hope they answer. But let's be honest, the majority of the time, nobody's answering numbers they don't know.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. The for people that have not produced before, especially now when you're talking about it being a text game, there is nothing more nerve-wracking than trying to complete a rundown and waiting, you know, you've been waiting an hour and a half for a response on a text message.
Yeah, exactly. I call it phishing, because what I'll do is I'll send out a line to, like, hey, we've got to talk to a football guest. I'll send out a line to like two or three great football guests that I know work well with the show. And hopefully one of them will get back to me, you know, in time for the show meeting so I can put one of them on. But that also now comes down to, instead of being great at cold calling, it comes down to relationships.
Right.
So like what I tell young producers is, let's say you get, you know, a big time guest to come on, and they come on and it's a good conversation. The best thing to do is, the second they get off, send a follow up text and be like, hey, man, that was great. I really appreciate your time. I hope you'll do this for us again, but you were really good, and thanks again. Just little things like that, so hopefully they remember you, because what you need to do with guests these days is build a relationship. So when they see your phone number come through on a text, they'll be like, all right, that was a cool guy. That was a painless experience. I'm cool with doing that again.
Yeah, and also when they say they can't do it or don't want to do it today, I always try and send a follow-up saying, hey, no worries, hopefully we'll catch each other next time, for that very same reason, right?
Absolutely, because, listen, you don't want to just go silent on them. You're asking them to do you a favor, most times for absolutely free, right? Hey, give
right.
me 10, 15 minutes of your time for free. So you have to be as respectful and polite as possible and show appreciation.
For sure. All right. So we need to start wrapping the show up, and I always end the show with the same two questions. So I'll start with, what is it you think you want to do next? Where do you see yourself going from here?
I want to be a program director or a market manager. That's always been my goal. I'm lucky that working on Cap Show, I have an open mic. He has a forum where he likes the producers to chime in, and he's very good about talking about us. But being on air was never my goal. That was never my desire. I always wanted to be a program director, a programmer, or, you know, a market manager. So that's hopefully my next goal, and that's the next thing I'm going to accomplish.
Would you go anywhere to make that happen, or do you want to stay in Chicago?
I mean, ideally, I'd like to stay in Chicago because this is where I'm born and raised, but I would not be against moving. You know, a couple of years ago, I almost moved to LA for a job, which would have been great. And, you know, I'm up for moving. If anybody's listening that has a job opening, I prefer warm weather climates. Being from Chicago, I could do without winter. But, you know, for the opportunity to program a station, a major station in a major market, I'd certainly be willing to move.
And last but not least, what is it you wish that either Cap or program director or whatever understood a little bit better about either your job in general, or at least the way you do your job?
You know, for me, I think I'm lucky that my boss and Cap understand how hard I work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm in here every day, you know, almost three and a half hours before the show starts, doing show prep for the show as if I was going to host it, just because, you know, as a producer, you're the safety net for the host. There's nothing that you can't know in case the host doesn't know something. So I like to do show prep as if I'm going to host myself. What I would like them to know is, you know, as an executive producer, with all the plates you have in the air, and then also having the ability to interact on the air, how difficult that can be at times, and, you know, how seamlessly I think I do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point, that there is, I think sometimes programmers especially, but hosts too, probably think of throwing it to the producer for their opinion is almost like I think they sometimes think that the producer views it as a reward. But you're right, man. If you're screening phone calls, preparing audio, trying to figure out where you go from here, like being called on to suddenly weigh in, that is one more plate to spin.
Yeah, and it's like an amazing ability that I think producers have where I can listen to the show with one ear,
right,
talk to a caller or a guest on the other ear, be reading an important piece of copy that's coming up in the next break, and still be able to voice my opinion. It's like four things at once. If I try to do that at home with my wife, I fail miserably. She always says to me, how is it that at work you can handle these things, but at home you can't talk to me and chew gum? But, you know, I guess I have to have my superhuman work hat on at that point.
Right. Yeah. Because when you get home, you can shut it all down. You can literally struggle with walking and chewing gum at that point.
That's right. I'm a professional listener for 3 hours a day, and that's it.
That's right. Sorry, honey. You're not in that time frame.
Sorry, babe. Go stand on the other side of the glass. Let's try it.
That's right. There just needs to be a pane in your window. Danny, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Dimitri.
So this week, let's talk transition. I mean, it is the final question I ask everybody on this show. What is it you want to do next? And for those of you that are producers that would like to make the move to being an on-air host full-time, look, I don't have a ton of advice to offer you that you've not already heard before, right? You've got to be clear about what your intentions and your desires are. You've got to be able to take good feedback. You've got to be able to have a good open line of communication, not just with your host, but with your PD, and let them hear what it is you're working on. So all of that kind of stuff, you know, you're going to hear that stuff from a lot of people. The one thing I will tell you, just from the experience of being, of making that transition from producer to host, being on that other side of the glass and having to learn the hard way and having to teach people, you know, producers that work with me and having to then make them learn the hard way, the best lesson I can give you is understand what it means to be a good partner. I think any host knows that their producer has designs on doing something more than just producing eventually, right? Plenty of people get into this business, find out they love the producing side of it, but I think most people don't immediately start out thinking that way, right? So a lot of producers do come into this business with the idea of wanting to be hosts. Look, hosts know that. Hosts know that is the goal. And that's why, for the most part, hosts will try and incorporate a good producer that is doing all the work behind the scenes into being an on-air part of the show. The thing that will kill those opportunities for you as a producer is if when you are passed the baton, you refuse to give it back. Since I started working with JB and I've been listening to stations all over the country, I can tell when a young producer is eager to show off, when a young producer is already thinking about that next step that he might be 2 or 3 years away from, but he's going to show you whatever you think, be damned. He's going to show you he's ready. And the host will ask the producer a question, and then 5 minutes later, the producer might hand things back off to the host. That's the kind of thing that will immediately kill any future opportunities you have to be on air. So if you have that discussion with your host that you want to be an on-air part of the show, that you do have designs eventually on being a host, take the time to understand what it means to be a good co-host, because very rarely do you go from producing to the lead chair anyway. So understand, take the time to sort of learn what a good back and forth sounds like, whether that is listening to other teams, whether that is going back and listening to your host's air checks and figuring out where you can jump in to move the point along, or move the discussion along with the next point. Figure out what a conversation sounds like, or I guess maybe be more interested in better understanding and entertaining with a conversation, as opposed to making sure everybody knows how smart or how entertaining you are. That's the best advice I can give you if you want to be somebody that makes the transition from producing to on air. Thanks so much for listening this week. I will talk to you next week on another edition of the BSM Producers Podcast. In the meantime, go listen to the 5 new episodes of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. And if you aren't already listening to Under the Radar with Brandon Contis, do that as well. Talk to you next week.
You don't want to believe it, but maybe the show is over.
Thank you for listening to the Producers Podcast. To connect with Dimitri, follow him on Twitter at Dimitri Ravenos. And for the latest sports media news, visit our website, BarrettSportsMedia.com.